fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Oh, yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. Hey, it's a Friday, man. You made it to the end of the week. The light is finally at the end of the tunnel. You can enjoy, pat yourself on the back. You scream ice cream. We all scream for ice cream. Or at least that's what we tell ourselves. So great to have you along with us as well. Spend a little time here on The Voice of Reason, your dose of reason, sanity, and common sense for the day. And it's always so great to have you with us, broadcasting out of the heart of the nation here in Wichita, Kansas, on our flagship radio station. We are all over the country, multiple radio stations and TV, live streaming, podcasting, however you watch or listen to the show. So great to have you with us, your Millennial General, reporting for duty like we do every single day. And what a show we have. Today's a very special day. I will tell you that. First and foremost, bottom of the hour, we have Anders Edwardson coming on the program. He is author of his latest book, Radical Betrayal, as we talk about the left wing and what he calls the neocons that are ruining this nation. How do we get back on track, and who exactly are each of the groups that he identifies as the ones harming this nation moving forward? We'll have that fun conversation coming up at the bottom of this hour. So today's a very special day, and I will say that not just because it's a Friday, although every Friday is a special day. And as you know on this program, every single day is our favorite day of the entire week, and we just carpe diem all over the place like we do all the time. So that being said, today's a very special day. Why? Because today is the day that we get to do something a little bit different just for a moment. I won't spend a lot of time on this, but let's have some fun, shall we?
Weird news of the day.
I know, it's a Friday. So today, my friends, is National Alien Day. Yeah, so happy National Alien Day. So while you're driving home for work, or if you're listening to the podcast later on, I want you to close your eyes, unless you're driving, for just a moment, and I want you to ponder, who in society today could be an alien? Who could be an alien in today's times? I have a few in mind, and I don't want to name any names, but I'm thinking that...
I am told this is a garbage disposal.
I'm thinking that could maybe... I mean, there's very few people that could be so ignorant about common sense that they have to have come from a different planet to be dropped here and be like, wow, I'm just trying to figure things out. I will say, just to give a little plug, there is a hysterical show that Mrs. Voice of Reason and I have been watching lately, and we're done. Season 3 is over. I am waiting on pins and needles for season 4 if they announce it and if they start recording it. It's through the Sci-Fi Channel, but you can find the first 2 seasons on Netflix. You can find all 3 seasons on Peacock if you have that streaming service. But Resident Alien, highly recommended. One of the funniest shows I think I've ever seen in my entire life. That is the storyline that an alien comes in, comes to the Earth. He crash lands. His whole mission was to destroy humans on the planet. And then he ends up having to take a human form to blend in and then go through shenanigans and then end up having to save the planet and save humans from other alien races. It's a very hysterical show. Alan Tudyk is actually the actor in that one, which I had no clue who Alan Tudyk was until I looked a little bit into him. And he voices like essentially every cartoon for Disney. And he does a lot of voiceover work. He was in a lot of different movies. He's apparently a very huge actor. No clue about who this guy was. Resident Alien, highly recommend it. And happy Alien Day to you. I'm not going to do this a whole lot, but there's apparently a top 10 list of states with the most alien abductions. And I'm very devastated because Kansas is not one of them. So failure on us, my friends. Failure on us. The state where I'm hailing from in our flagship in Kansas, we are not in the top 10 for some of the most alien abductions. I'm waiting in anticipation for my turn to go up to the mothership. Why? Because I'm assuming that their leader is way better than the leader that we have today in our time, with Joe Biden. So there it is. Happy Alien Day and our latest with our weird news of the day.
Weird news right. of the day.
By the way, I will say real quickly that Vermont was actually number one on that list. So our listeners out in Vermont, with our podcast listeners, yeah, Vermont, you're number one for alien abductions. I find that kind of strange. Although that is where Bernie Sanders is from, isn't it? Was from Vermont. So I guess there's some interesting individuals out there. I mean, if you keep electing that kind of guy, then it would make a lot of sense. I thought it was Alaska. which is number four on the list. But I thought it was Alaska because of all the stories that you hear, the movie, the Fourth Kind, and all those stuff that's happening. So I thought that that's what was going on. Apparently not. So they're number four on the list for alien abductions. Vermont, Washington, Montana, Alaska, and Maine are the top five. So something to ponder going into a Friday. Have to start off the show kind of interesting, especially for today. All right, we got a lot to get to. Let's get into our What's Trending.
What's trending today?
Let's go to Washington, D.C., shall we? There was a letter that was written earlier today and sent off to the Public Broadcasting Network, the CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, from Senator Ted Cruz. Now, this is going into, I'm assuming, the conversation that we've had lately with censorship, along with the federal budget, which we just passed a few weeks ago. That also leads into the additional spending that we're doing on foreign policy and with the TikTok issue. And then with, of course, the announcement of NPR recently being extremely biased and NPR not liking that and coming out saying that we're all about robust debate and we're all about robust conversation within NPR and PBS and all the other public networks that use your taxpayer money to try and get information out there. Now, NPR radio stations all over the nation do, depending on what markets they are, do relatively well. And it's usually for individuals who I would assume are center left on the political scale, although there are some center right individuals that listen to NPR that say, and I say that's in air quotes for our radio listeners, say that they don't want the opinionated conversation. They don't want to listen to a conservative right wing talk show host. They don't want to listen to us give about our opinions because, remember, I am not a journalist. I am not a writer. I am not a news individual. I am a commentator. I take the news and then I talk about it. We try to break it down in a somewhat entertaining way. And then we make you ponder about it, think a little bit deeper about it. And then I give my opinion on it based on my experiences and the facts that I know. I don't give you misinformation, but I give you opinion based on the facts that I know. And I try to relay those facts. That's what we do. That's all we do on this program. And that's what most talk show hosts do as well. But people that want NPR, you could essentially just turn on an artificial intelligence name and just say rattle off the headlines of the day. And that's what NPR does. Or at least that's what they say that they do. In fact, they say that they like their robust conversations within NPR, according to the latest CEO.
How do we look holistically and make sure that we are ensuring a really wide range of perspectives and views? I think another piece of that is making sure we have active and robust debate in the newsroom from a wide variety of perspectives so that those conversations are being had. But giving people the ability to feel as though that those conversations are welcomed, creating a culture where those conversations are welcomed, those are incredibly important priorities for us in order to be of service to the widest number of people.
Now, that's the goal. And this is kind of behind-the-scenes radio industry. The best way to approach, because obviously ratings are everything in radio, because ratings means that people are listening to you, which means that you attract advertisers, whether you're talking a national program or whether you're talking about a terrestrial individual radio station in your local market, that you want the best programming, you want the best imaging, you want the best whatever, because that way it attracts listeners. So therefore you get a good rating. So therefore you can get advertisers. So therefore you can make money. That's the whole point of radio broadcasting, is getting information out there and doing it in an attractive way to try to appeal. So when, and by the way, if you're listening to any of the radio stations carrying this show and you get one of those radio books and they're like, hey, fill out your nice little book here, which Nielsen usually still does. And, you know, hey, hint, hint, wink, wink, listen to and write down the show and whatever time that it airs on your local radio affiliate, because that's what keeps us in business. That's what we do. And say that you listen to these stations, wherever they may be. That's how we operate. NPR, PBS, TV does this the same way. They don't have to worry about that because they don't have to stay alive based on advertisers, which advertisers advertise based on the number of listeners that you have and the popularity of your stations in your local market. They don't have to do that. It's all taxpayer subsidized money. So them saying that they want a robust conversation, in generalizations here in the radio market, you want to appeal to the broadest base that you possibly can, which is why AM talk radio, and even now mostly going on FM and translators and everything as well, in whatever market that you're in, the best appeal is to have your opinion and be authentic because people will trust you, even if they don't agree with you. You got to remember Rush Limbaugh, one of the most controversial guys ever on radio that essentially started this format of radio in the country, was a very controversial guy. And some say, well, you have to play middle of the road. And it's kind of like in politics, too. Play the middle of the road. Try to appeal to as many people as possible. Try to win over the other side as much as you can, the ones that are on the fence. You don't have to, because then you become disauthentic. You don't become genuine. You want to be genuine when you're on radio, because then you'll appeal to the people that obviously agree with you. And the people that don't agree with you, it's getting harder in today's times because it's so partisan, but they'll at least respect you. And most of the time, they'll still listen to you. Rush Limbaugh had tons of Democrat listeners that despised what he stood for, but they listened because they wanted to hear what he had to say. NPR tries to do it in a very non-controversial way to appeal to as many people as possible. And sometimes it works and sometimes it does not. But we have to remember that behind the cloak of being nonpartisan, behind the cloak of trying to be as appealing as you can to as many people as possible, 99.99999% of the time, when you try to appeal to the broad audience without being opinionated and just being middle of the road, that middle of the road comes off as very center left leaning. And by that, I mean that they attack Republicans more so than Democrats, which is why we're seeing so many whistleblowers come out for NPR and say that they don't have any Republicans on their payroll, or at least it's like a 20-to-1 ratio. And they silence those that try to question that. And in fact, the new CEO of NPR has said that during a TED Talk that happened just back, I believe, in like 2012 when this was done.
Perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start. In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done.
All right, hold on. Hold on a second. I'm going to play that back. I really want you to listen to that again. This again is the CEO of NPR that says she's about robust debate, robust conversation, but then fires the individual that says there's no robust debate going on internally behind the scenes because they're government subsidized and just essentially regurgitating what the government tells them to do because they're on the government payroll. That's their boss. That's the owner of these radio stations and PBS for the TV stations on that front. She says that the way that you attract the most amount of people and find the middle ground is not by seeking truth, but disregarding truth to find the middle ground on the conversation.
Perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start. In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done.
Getting things done and finding the middle ground, wherever that middle ground may be, is more important than seeking truth. That's according to the head of the NPR. Now, that audio, by the way, from Fox News, where they dug that up from back in, I believe it was 2012 when that was done, before she was actually the CEO of NPR, which just happened relatively recently. Seeking truth gets in the way of finding that middle ground. No matter what the middle ground is, even if it's an extremist that's nudging the pendulum a little bit further and further and further away from truth, we change what truth is to find the middle ground for everybody so they can all be happy. Meaning, you just continue to shift things further to the left as the left continues to pull and pull and pull on that pendulum, and you just redefine what truth really is to appease them, because that's what we're supposed to do in society, apparently.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed, it is 24 minutes past the hour. Welcome back into it. Radio, TV, live streaming, and podcasting. However you watch us, check us out. So great to have you. By the way, we do have our live video stream, which you can find on our social media. You can also find it on OpsLens, OpsLens.com, their app, their website, their Roku TV channel. We are broadcasting on there. What's up, guys? So great to have you. And, of course, our website at HoosierReason.com, which there is a chat room there, too. I will be checking that sporadically throughout the program. You can leave a comment on whatever we have to say. You can always watch some of the past episodes on there, too, all at HoosierReason.com. Click on the live tab. We have the live audio and the live video feed happening for you as we roll each and every day. All right, so we have the current CEO of NPR. that years ago made the comment that we need to disregard truth in order to find common ground. And even the seeking of truth could be so controversial that we should just ignore it and just find the common ground. This is what she said.
Perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start. In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done.
Okay, so I want to reiterate the fact that this is the head of a media industry. Now, it's a government media industry, so truth is going to be very loosey-goosey on their front anyways, because it's really punching out government propaganda. But truth, the whole point of journalism is to find truth. Isn't that what the whole point of journalism is? The whole point of media is to find truth. That's what we do on this program, even though it's opinionated, so therefore it could be my truth and somebody else's, which we're going to get into that in just a second. The whole point is to find truth, and then to my job is to convince people, as the opinionated commentator of the right-wing conservative radical talk show that it is, of Reason, Common Sense, and a show called The Voice of Reason, that we find the truth, and then my job is to try and convince people of the truth by having a conversation. Journalists don't do the convincing. They just report the truth, whatever that truth may be, whether it hurts people's feelings or not. But she takes it a step further and says that you disregard the truth to find common ground. Then she said this.
One of the things that we could all acknowledge is that part of the reason we have such glorious chronicles to the human experience and all forms of culture is because we acknowledge there are many different truths.
No, there's not. There is one truth. Now, there may be different perspectives of the truth. Obviously, everybody has their own human experience, right? Every single human being on the face of the earth has had a different human experience. Their growing up has been different. Their families have been different. Their cultures have been different. Their views on the world have been different. Obviously, everybody's going through a different experience. So that's why, like, when I see people having a bad day, being grumpy, you know, I had a good day, so I'm happy, but they had a grumpy day. Maybe they had a bad day. Maybe their boss yelled at them. Maybe they got fired. Maybe they, you know, saw their spouse doing something. Who knows? Whatever. They're having a bad day. I'm not going to judge them for being grumpy. They're having a rough day. I'm going to put a smile on, try and cheer them up. If I can make them chuckle for just a moment, then I did my job and I'm happy. That's my goal. I don't really care how people respond. You're supposed to go into a conversation with no expectation of how people are supposed to respond, because then it just lets you down and it makes you grumpy and ruins your day. I just don't do that. I don't really care. I get it. Everybody has a different human experience. Every single day, their upbringing, their view on life. I get that. But that's different. That's different. I want to reiterate, because people are like, wait a second, Andy, what do you say? That's different than truth. 2 + 2 = 4. How do we know that? Because a lot of mathematicians for a long time ended up breaking down that theory that 2 + 2 = 4. And that's how we have a construct of society. That's how we have a foundation, a barrier of how society actually functions. What these individuals are advocating for by saying that there is no absolute truth and that everybody can just believe anything that they want to, from a gender to, you know, a race to a skin color to the sky color that's out there right now with the sky, that making that means that they're advocating for anarchy. There's no structure in society. There's no basic understanding of reality. And that's what they're advocating for. There's truth. There's opinion, but there's also truth. And we have to relay the truth.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When reason meets radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into it on the home stretch here. Last half hour of the program for your Friday. Pat yourself on the back, man. Making it to the end of the week. That's exciting. We continue to carpe diem all over this place. By the way, it's not just National Alien Day, so I did enjoy reading those stories a little bit ago.
Weird news of the day.
Yeah. So happy National Alien Day. But it is, by the way, Melania Trump's birthday as well. So that's pretty exciting. So happy birthday to Melania Trump. Today, Donald Trump making a statement earlier before he was going into court saying that he was not able to spend the day with Melania because of this ridiculous court case, and not too happy about that one. But happy birthday to Melania Trump there. Interesting conversation about this TED Talk from the current CEO of NPR, saying that we need to bypass truth in order to find middle ground with people. So in other words, if you continue to push the envelope and push the political scale further and further and further to one side or the other, but predominantly right now we're seeing it from the left, just changing the narrative of everything, that you don't stick to truth and say that's nuts and that you're absolutely wrong. You say, okay, well, let's find a way to appease you and find middle ground between everybody. So that way that's more important than actually absolute truth. And that's kind of weird. And then she goes on to say that there is no truth, which is kind of bonkers. Again, there is truth. You can have different experiences, but there's a truth, and that what keeps us, I don't know, as a structured society and a foundation for us to function, or else you'd have absolute anarchy, which seems more and more likely, which is what their ultimate goal really is. To talk about some of this, kind of a fun conversation, and a heck of a lot more.
What's trending today?
I will say that's what made America exceptional, right? We knew what a truth was. We actually set our foundation, and it was a very brutal thing that we went through with, you know, our obviously our revolution and then the Articles of Confederation and then overhauling that to the Constitution and sticking to a document that's not a living document that just kind of goes by the whims of whatever the flavor of the day is and then changing up laws because the other side is losing the board game, so they want to change the board game rules in the middle of playing the game with their friends, that we actually stick to the rules, we stick to the Constitution, and we stick to what we're all about that made us exceptional in the first place. But we don't seem to do that very often anymore. To talk about some of that and more, I'm excited to have on the program. He is author of the latest book, Radical Betrayal. Happy to have on here Mr. Anders Edvardsen. Anders, how are you, my friend?
Well, just fine. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on. Appreciate you jumping on here. I have to ask you as we start off here, what is American exceptionalism and what made us exceptional compared to other nations around the world?
Well, I could talk for 2-3 hours about that thing, but trying to give it in a few sentences. America was set up as an exceptional nation, in different by the founders, to be an alternative to the corrupt, bigoted regimes of Europe. To be different, to be exceptional was in America's genes, so to speak. And from this thing came a few practical policies also, like a small national government, a very strong constitution with strong protection for persons. DC should only deal with like military and foreign policy and some infrastructure and a few more things, while the rest, everyday life, should be settled either on the state level or on the local, or preferably by people themselves.
Yeah.
And for over 100 years, this worked fine. We became the richest country in the world. But around 1900, politicians started to get figures and started to pluck apart this great heritage to what we have today. And they betrayed American exceptionalism.
Yeah, that is very true. Starting with, you mentioned the early 1900s where we saw a lot of this change. When did this really get started? What administration or what led to the change? Was it really about the FDR time, or was it even before that with like Teddy Roosevelt, when we started expanding size of government and realizing that government can not solve, but at least say that they're solving a lot of issues just to be able to start gaining control over the masses?
I mean, it depends on what level you are looking at this. You can actually trace the kernel there already with Alexander Hamilton's policy victory over Thomas Jefferson about the role of the federal government in the late 1700s. You can also find a kernel or two during the Civil War. As most conservatives and libertarians know, there is nothing that feeds a big, aggressive government as much as war. But in my book, Radical Betrayal, I really start with the American War in 1898, because that's when we went from a peaceful to an aggressive foreign policy, which is part of the betrayal of the founding fathers' great heritage.
Yeah.
The more domestic betrayal started around the same time with the so-called progressive movement in the 1890s. And with I see that Paddy to some degree, but first and foremost, Woodrow Wilson, because by introducing what he called war socialism after dragging us in the First World War to save the world and remake the system, he was the first big government president. And then that was rolled back after the war for another decade or so. But then it came back with a vengeance, as we know, with the Great Depression and the New Deal, and more so with LBJ and the Great Society in the 1960s.
Yeah, and then they started drooling over each other to see how big they could expand things thereafter with, like you said, the Great Deal and then all the administrations after that. Which, Andrew, I have to ask, going into that time when we started creating this agency and this the Department of Education and the Department of Energy and the Department of Housing and all this stuff, was any of that intended by the Constitution?
Absolutely not. Even the most government-friendly father, Alexander Hamilton, it must be rotating counterclockwise in his grave today, because the federal government should have nothing to do with education or health care or most social issues at all. They should, as I said before, they should just deal with military, currency, foreign policy, some infrastructure, and other things that single states simply can with themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we have been, America has been totally turned inside out and upside down the last 100 years or so.
Yeah, it's been sad to watch. We're talking with Anders Edvardsen with his book, Radical Betrayal, How Liberals and Neoconservatives Are Wrecking American Exceptionalism, which, by the way, you can find online at edvardsen.biz. That's two S's with Edvardsen, edvardsen.biz. Let's bring it to the today's time, and we see the left-wing progressives, and we see the quote-unquote neoconservatives as well. What's the fault on each side of this that's wrecking, as you mentioned in the title here, wrecking the nation and driving away that American exceptionalism? And where should we be on the quote-unquote political spectrum today to bring us back to those constitutional values, do you think?
Start with the last thing. Today, there is only one American party, ideologically, and that's the Republican Party. The Democratic Party has gone so far left, as Reagan said, that they have left America. They actively, policy-wise and ideologically and mentally, a European party. What I mean with this also radical betrayal and the liberals and the neoconservatives is that up until 100, 120, American exceptionalism, this original set of ideas and notions and sentiments that was created by the founding fathers to hold this country together like a mental glue, if you want. Both Democrats and Republicans and anti-federalists, they all agreed about the basics of American exceptionalism, and that held us together, rich, poor, black, white, free, unfree, all young. But over the last 100 or so, the extremists on both sides, on the left side has the Democratic side has more or less all but abandoned all talk about America as an exceptionalist country, because their policies goes 180 degrees against what all the founding fathers wanted. They want a big central government, federal government, high taxes, a lot of regulation, and all that, and they don't even use exceptionalist rhetoric anymore, except for the word equality, which they have corrupted, meaning going from meaning equality of unity to equality of outcome. So that's on the left side. On the right side, by abandoning the peaceful foreign policy, the so-called neocons in their own party have done. They have used American exceptionalism so much, but also corrupted the meaning of it, because George Washington and these guys, the last thing they wanted to do was to send American troops to others to other try nations. To.
That's true. Yeah. I tell you, Anders, hold on to that thought.
We got American system on this.
Yeah, hold that thought. We got to hold that thought. We got to take a hard break here, real quick. I want to come back and continue this when we come back, right around the corner with Anders Edwardson. Stay here.
The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. Reason, common sense, rationale. That's just what we do here on the program each and every day. So great to have you with us, especially setting up another weekend, which is what we like to set the tone for as well. Fascinating conversation. I love talking about the history of the nation, political theology, philosophy, and how we've gotten to the point we are today compared to where we were so far in the past, and how far we've, I don't want to say progressed, but maybe degressed. A little bit for sure. We're hanging out with Anders Edwardson. He is the author of the latest book, Radical Betrayal, How Liberals and Neoconservatives Are Wrecking American Exceptionalism. You can find the book on Amazon. Also find it on his website at edwardson.biz. I hated to cut you off there, Anders. I do want to ask you a question, though, as we got a few minutes left of the program, on today's politics and how things have evolved, and especially someone like Donald Trump, who obviously leading the Republican Party, but is a populist as opposed to, let's say, like a Ted Cruz conservative constitutionalist, which is what people like to call him. But the populism that's running through, because I got to admit, I've never been a fan of quote unquote populism, because you don't know what you're going to get. It's kind of a wild card where it's just the mindset of the people as opposed to sticking to true values of what we were intended. Luckily, Donald Trump being a populist and a more conservative populist has led us in the right direction, getting kind of sort of back to where we need to. But your thoughts on the whole populist movement that we're seeing, not just in the country here, but really all over the world right now?
Yeah, that's basically it's a positive sign. But the problem with the term, as you say, it's like nice weather. It depends on being with it. Also, as you say, Trump, 99 times out of 100, if you ask me, gets it right, because what right-wing populism in America means is pretty much trusting, going back and trust the basic that was laid down by the founders. And later great presidents as Lincoln and other Reagan, other great conservatives. Yeah. So Trump is absolutely the right key in this lock. Then if you place it in an international context, it completely means what you mean. If you take Nigel Farage in Britain, for example, I really like him. But European conservatism is in many places something quite different from American conservatism. In the old days, it was the conservatives in Europe that supported big government and monarchs and taxing people and regulating people and stuff like that. So you must go into every country to look at what they mean with their populist tradition. In many places it's good. In other places it's something that we as Americans don't really feel comfortable with.
Sure. That is very true. Anders, we got just about a minute left here, so we have to keep it quick. But last question for you is, do you think we could ever get back to the true constitutional foundation of this nation with such a large fourth branch of government with all these agencies and departments? Can we ever get back to what the true values were and get back to the concept of federalism?
Nothing is important. I'm a born optimist. That's why I immigrated to America to start with, because I love this country and the optimistic tone and the optimistic culture that is here. Will it be a tough thing to turn this around? Absolutely, with the deep state and the media and academia and all this. But we need to start to drain the swamp, so to speak. Start to clean house from top down.
Yeah.
And if we must change the culture. It's not only policies. That's easily done. All it takes is Trump in the White House and Republican majorities, and they can more or less change whatever policy they want. But if there's no resonance in the people for this, and then it creates a backlash.
Sure.
And the old policies will come back. So we must work long term to change
the culture.
And education here, of course, comes in. We must change the educational system.
I love that. Yeah, you're right. We got a long ways to go, not just policy wise, but actually changing the mindset of the people living in this culture and in this nation to actually understand it and live by it and defend it as well. Andrew, so great to talk to you, my friend. Good luck with the book. Let's get you back on again here real soon. We're out of time, my friends. Back at it again next week. Until then, we'll see you on the radio.